From KUER News in Salt Lake City, this is Radio West. I'm Doug Fabrizio. The LDS Church got rid of polygamy ages ago, yes? Well, sort of. First, to be really clear, the church no longer practices polygamy. Those who do are excommunicated. There's no ambiguity about it. But, and this is the but that is troubling the writer Carolyn Pearson, according to Mormon theology, there is polygamy in the Mormon heaven. A man can be married or sealed in a temple to multiple wives for eternity. A woman to only one man. And Pearson says this idea is causing all kinds of complications and pain for the women in real-life marriages today. In a new book, Pearson says this idea of eternal polygamy is dragging the faith down, and she's been called to do something about it. She'll join us today after the news.
Love what you hear? Radio West's podcast is made possible in part by thousands of KUER sustainers, along with Albion Financial Group, providing wealth management to the Intermountain West for over 30 years. Find out more online at albionfinancial.com.
This is Radio West. I'm Doug Fabrizio. So part of this conversation may be difficult for those unfamiliar with Mormonism to follow, but here's one thing that may help. Mormons believe marriage, or anyway, temple marriage, lasts for eternity, that people who die and go to heaven will still be married. And you've probably heard the Mormon catchphrase, families are forever. That's essentially where this comes from. But you can probably imagine some of the questions then that come from this idea, like, what happens if you get married in a temple and one spouse dies early and then a person gets remarried? What happens then? Or what happens if you fall out of love and want a divorce? Or here's one. What happens if you're a woman and you marry a man who has been married before in a temple and his wife had died? Where do you fit in the afterlife? Who gets to be with your husband, you or the first wife? And technically, according to Mormon doctrine, both of you do. The writer Carolyn Pearson has just written a book about this concept. She calls it eternal polygamy. And as she puts it in her book, polygamy delayed is still polygamy. And she says it's causing real fear and real pain, particularly for faithful women in the church. Pearson says it's a ghost. It's a ghost that has this dark life of its own, and it's bringing chaos, she says, to family relationships. It's leading many to lose their faith. Today in the program, Carolyn Pearson is joining us to talk about her book. It's called The Ghost of Eternal Polygamy, Haunting the Hearts and Heaven of Mormon Women and Men. You can join us, 801-585-WEST, our email address, radiowest@kuer.org. Carolyn Pearson is a poet, a playwright, an author. She is also, I should mention, a practicing member of the LDS Church. She's written on LGBT issues in her memoir, Goodbye, I Love You, and the book, No More Goodbyes. She's joining us today from a studio in Oakland, California. Carolyn Pearson, welcome back. Thanks for being with us.
Doug, thank you so much. I'm just so thrilled to be here with you.
Okay, so as I mentioned, for a lot of listeners, none of this is going to make much sense unless we maybe start with the LDS Church's official position on all of this, because as you point out in your book, this isn't just about polygamy lived now. It's about how it's sort of perceived as being lived in the afterlife. So the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints officially ended the practice of polygamy a long time ago. It's not seen as an acceptable way of life. Church officials don't look the other way. They're pretty unequivocal. But polygamy, you say, is fully embraced in heaven. Do you think this is something a lot of people, at least outside of the church, understand?
I believe that people outside of the church may have had a little peek into what this might mean. But in general, it's a very strange thought for them.
Yeah.
Very strange.
Yeah. Okay, so a Mormon man can spiritually have more than one wife.
Yes.
If his wife dies or if he is divorced, he can then be sealed to another woman in the temple. Would you just lay this out for us? How does it supposed to work?
Well, the essentials are, as you expressed, that a couple enters the temple to be married for time and all eternity. And the word for that is sealing,
yeah,
which is honored highly. And then, of course, and the real world stuff happens. And let's say in this case, the wife dies, let us say early. And, of course, it's expected that the husband will marry again and more than likely be sealed again, because that is the proper way things are done,
right,
within the church. And so he automatically is given to understand that he has these two wives now who have been sealed to him that are guaranteed that he can claim them as wives in the eternities. The opposite is not true for a woman who loses her husband, her sealed husband,
right,
from his death. She then becomes what may be called a sealed widow. And the stories of those women that I share are enough to break your heart,
yeah,
because she then is already taken. And many of them call themselves the Mormon lepers, because it's very difficult for them to find good Mormon men who want to marry them, knowing that they will be giving them up to their first husband when the woman reaches heaven. And not only that, the understanding is that the children that this man may have with this sealed widow that he has married, even the children of his own DNA, are now in the patriarchal, eternal kingdom of the first husband who has claim on them.
Yeah. Wait. I want to underline that. Say that again. So a Mormon woman, if her husband dies, she can't be sealed to her next husband, and any of the children she has with that second husband would be sealed to not that guy, but the first husband.
This is true. Now, let us express right off that there's a possibility that she can have that first cancellation, that first sealing canceled.
Right.
However, that is a very difficult step. And for her to make the determination to try to cancel that sealing, and even if she does make the decision to try, it is sometimes very, very difficult. Has to go through a lot of time and a lot of hoops to make it happen. And one woman who finally determined to do that lost the friendship of the entire family of her former husband, who refused even to speak to her after that.
Yeah.
Because evidently, according to their thinking, she had just cut him free from his eternal salvation. So it gets to be very, very complicated.
It's interesting. You say that right in the book, you say there is unreasonable pain within the hearts of so many faithful Mormon people.
Yes.
So let's talk about your sense of this all, because part of the work that you've done on all of this is to essentially do this survey. Give me a sense. This was in March of 2014. You reached out to people via social media and you asked them to take this survey.
Right.
Give us a sense of what you found. And I guess you were sort of overwhelmed by the reaction at first.
In a way I was, but in another way I wasn't, because I have known for decades and decades. See, I've published my first book in 1968, and I began to receive letters from women from all over the church and from men, but especially women expressing their pain. They loved the church, but there were certain things that just brought them so much pain. And polygamy was always, always one of those things. And so from my own experience, from learning in seminary, that was to be my eternal fate, and that God had many wives, and that's how eternity was extended. That brought me incredible personal confusion,
yeah,
and pain.
I want to come back to that story, by the way, Carolyn.
Yeah. Finally, I decided, you know, I want to do something for my Mormon sisters before I die. And I'm in good health, but I'm getting older. And it just descended on me as something that was mine to do, to see what could be done about trying to clarify or at least get these stories of pain out on the table so they could not be simply ignored. Because, and Doug, a theme that runs through this whole book is we are better than that. I have enormous appreciation and love for the Mormon community and respect for the Mormon system. And we are simply better than to allow this kind of pain and distress to go on for very much longer. So, yes, I send out a survey, just a private survey on my own, not a scientifically valid survey,
right.
Just one that asked for people's opinions on the concept of eternal polygamy and the inequality of the sealing practices. I asked for Mormons, former Mormons, men, women, conservative, liberal, to take this survey. And at the end of the survey, I asked for those who would to leave their personal stories, because that was really the most important thing that I hoped for out of the survey.
Right.
So on day one of the survey, I asked my friend who was helping with it to check in to see if – I was hoping that a few hundred had taken it. So he got back to me and he said, wow, today – day number one, over 2,400 people took the survey. And he said, this blows the faith crisis survey out of the water, which is one that showed the kinds of reasons for which Mormon people were leaving the church. But in a way that it just astonished me that on that day, 2,400 people went to the site and took it. But in another way, I already knew the huge bursting of what would be coming from tapping that group of people who for decades and decades had quietly talked to family, quietly talked to bishops, quietly pled with state presidents, written to general authorities, but had no place to really make their stories understood. I knew how large that group was and how passionate they were and how hurt they were. So in a way, it was not really a surprise to have that huge avalanche. And then when we closed the survey after 4 weeks, over 8,000 people had taken the survey.
It's interesting that the breakdown on the survey, 70% female, 30% male, 76% married, 91% current members of the church. And this 58%, nearly 60% reporting feelings of sadness or anger about it. That's pretty convincing, I guess. There's a lot of concern.
That convinces me. I know there is tremendous concern.
Can I get you to turn to page 9? Because there's this, I know you have your book. This is one of the stories. I guess this was one of the first. This came just a few hours after the survey went out. Do you mind reading it or at least referring to
it?
I want to put you on the spot there.
I'd be so happy to read this. In 2003, I married my husband in the Boston Temple. At the time, I was a senior at BYU, and my husband was freshly back from his mission to England. I consider myself a very normal, faithful, and mainstream member of the church in a very happy marriage. But after the birth of the last of our three children in 2010, I began to experience an inordinate fear of my own death. It was always there, that terrible anxiety. As I sifted through my fears, I came to realize the only reason for this terror is because I know that if I die, especially young, my husband will surely remarry and be sealed to another woman, and I will then face an eternity of polygamy. Is that simple? And that fear has developed to the point that I now experience a form of hypochondria. I have been to an anxiety specialist, but because the doctrine of the church hasn't changed, there's nothing she could do for me. I've been to my doctor nearly every month in the last year, complaining about some symptom or another, because surely, if we catch the cancer early, I won't die, and my husband won't get remarried. and I won't have to live polygamy forever and ever and ever. It's simple and real. It's my painful truth. I pray. I fast. I seek peace from my Father in heaven. But the peace doesn't come. I want to feel like an equal in my eternal marriage. I want to feel the assurance from God that my happiness, both now and eternally, is important to Him. But polygamy in the next life seems like a punishment, not eternal glory.
This brings us to your own sort of personal encounter with all of this. And I want you to go back and tell this story. You were 16 years old, I think it was. You were in an LDS religion class in school. This was seminary, I think they call it these days. And your teacher told you this story about being sealed. Would you tell us about this? Because you describe it as, this is how you put it in the book, the very first earthquake in your own spiritual life.
Yeah, I will. And I could read that, but I'll just tell it. Yes, I was 16, attending the late, great BYU High School in Provo. And I remember so clearly the day that our seminary teacher, a man that we all just loved, he said to us, students, I'm going to tell you something today that is very, very important. And Doug, I was one of the young women of the church who was doing everything right, as far as I could tell. I was doing everything I had been taught, and I wanted to know everything that was important, and so I really perked up and listened. And this is what I heard. Students, I need to tell you that I was married to a wonderful woman, and we were sealed in the temple, and she passed away. Subsequently, a few years later, I married a second woman. I was sealed to her. And so I am sealed now to these two women that I bear you my testimony. I will receive both of them as wives in the eternal heaven of our Lord. And I bear you my testimony that our Father in heaven has many, many wives, our mothers in heaven. And that is the economy of the heavens, that this is how life is extended. And I know this sounds strange to many of you, especially you young women here, but I bear you my testimony that as you become less selfish and as you grow in your spiritual understanding, you will understand this doctrine, this principle, and you will yearn to live it. And I bear you my testimony that this is true. And I remember leaving the school that day and walking from school to my home. And there was a pain in my chest that I really had not felt before. And it was some kind of a first division between me and God and between me and God's church. Because if this is what God has in store for me, what can I do? It feels so wrong. But if this is what God wants, what can I do? And I suffered with that for many, many years as a student at Brigham Young University, a very excellent student. I would come home from my studies sometimes and weep, trying to figure out, and this is a shameful thing, as I even express it, to figure out God's plan for women in this church and in His heaven, and reading the books by the brethren on the fourth floor of the library at BYU, getting so adept at going to the index, finding W for women, M for mother in heaven, finding a little crumb here and there, and then going home and crying. Because the reality of who I knew myself to be, a good, smart, intelligent, faithful woman, somehow maleness trumped everything.
Yeah.
Somehow maleness was golden and femaleness was silver. And I could never, never make sense out of that.
You say that this at first it seems you were sort of resigned to it, that you figured this polygamy thing would just happen forever, and I was guessing it would hurt forever, as you put it in the book. But there's this theme there. You say that in the book that you came to realize that, at least at this time in your thinking, that there was a God who hurts you, and that you had begun this painful journey toward an impossible goal, and that is how to love this God who hurts you. Now, you came to think about it differently, and we'll talk about that, but explain what you were thinking then, that your concept of the God now, when you're starting to understand this polygamy business, was that maybe his intent was to hurt you in some way.
To allow something that, as I could only conceive of it now, was extraordinarily painful. And, Doug, so many of the stories that came to me had those same words. If this is what God has planned out for heaven, I'd rather be in hell. Almost that same wording came over and over and over from so many women who wrote in. So, yes, as a young person, well, this is the kind of a schizophrenic moment to have a belief in a God, and God must be good, but God wants for you something that is so painful.
Yeah.
There's no way to make that make sense. So it becomes one of the crazy-making things of your religion. And many women experience crazy-making things in a religion that they love.
Go to page 24 with me, if you would. I want to have you read another one of these stories. Because you mentioned that for some women, in theory anyway, they had this willingness to not go to heaven, to forego having to go through this experience of polygamy. And this first story, I wonder if you could read this to us. This is another one of these stories that you've collected.
I will. And there are almost all the stories in this book come from that survey.
Yeah.
Every once in a while, there is a story that I heard somewhere and I tracked it down. And this is one of them. I heard this woman speak on a podcast, and I tracked her down and asked if she would write this out for me. Recently, she wrote, "My highly Orthodox mother and I had a conversation that I found devastating. She said, the one thing that would cause me to lose my faith and leave the church would be if a bishop called your dad and me in and told us that we had been chosen to practice polygamy. I couldn't do it. I will never do it. I said, even though you truly thought the instruction came straight from God? Even then, I don't care who it came from. This shocked me because my mother had never even given a whisper of disagreeing with God or his church about anything. I asked her, Mom, what will you do in the afterlife in the celestial kingdom? What will you do when Dad has been given plural wives to populate his worlds without number? She replied with a sad smile, Oh, sweetie, I won't be there. Confused, I asked, You won't be in the celestial kingdom? You're the best woman I know. How can you say you won't be there? Well, I make sure that I commit little sins. Nothing big, just little sins like lying and being judgmental and other things. Just enough so I don't have to go to the highest level of the celestial kingdom. So I'll never have to worry about that polygamy stuff. Does Dad know this? Yes, we've talked about it, and he understands. So you won't be with Dad in heaven? Sadly, Mom shook her head and said, I just try not to think of it too much. Yes, Doug, that's a story that haunted me. It just haunts me.
Does the official Mormon Church teach that everyone is expected to live in polygamy in the afterlife? You know, can you opt out, or can you decide, no?
Well,
I'm happy
no,
with-
there's no there is no teaching that says that everybody will be living in polygamy in the afterlife. That's certainly not true. But the teaching is that polygamy absolutely was ordained of God, and that there are places and times in which polygamy will still be the marriage that is superior. And see, Doug, there's so much of this that is in confusion because things have never been really cleared up from the 1800s when it was underlined and underlined that in order to reach the highest level of eternal exaltation, one had to be in polygamy.
Yeah.
That has just been swept under the rug and hoped people don't talk about it. But that permeates all of the thinking still. And so while it's not taught that everybody will be living in polygamy in heaven, the every day in Mormon temples, there are men being married to a second wife, being sealed to her with the understanding that this wife and the one that is now on the other side will be available as wives to this man. So there's no question that the Mormon understanding is that there will be a significant amount of polygamy in heaven. And there still is, whether it's folklore left over from what was absolute, no question teachings, that in the highest third of the celestial kingdom, this is reserved for those who have married the proper way in God's eyes, and that is plural marriage.
Carolyn Pearson is with us. Her book is The Ghost of Eternal Polygamy, Haunting the Hearts and Heaven of Mormon Women and Men. We're getting some questions and some responses. We'll get to a few of those when we get back from a break. Back in a moment. You're listening to Radio West on KUER. This is Radio West. I'm Doug Fabrizio. Today in the program, we're talking about a Mormon practice of polygamy that the writer and poet Carolyn Pearson says still persists. The official LDS Church, of course, ended the practice of polygamy more than a century ago. But according to Mormon theology and doctrine, a man can still be married or sealed to multiple wives in a temple. In other words, in the Mormon heaven, there are plural marriages. And she's written a book about this because she says it is haunting the hearts and heaven of Mormon women and men. The book is called The Ghost of Eternal Polygamy. Here's an email from Leanne, I think it is. She says, my husband never got a temple divorce from his first wife. In the eyes of the church, they are still husband and wife. She had to give her approval in writing to our marriage in 1996. Katrina writes, one of the myriad reasons I formally resigned from the Mormon church last weekend was because it was the only way to cancel my marriage, my temple sealing to my ex, and have it recognized by the church. Not that I believe it anymore, Katrina writes, but just as a matter of principle.
Mm-hmm.
So to that last point, to those who don't believe anymore, why is this important? Because it seems to be important to somebody. It's, I guess, like Katrina says, it's a matter of principle to some.
Right. I've heard that quite a number of times. That even though I may not believe that particular thing, here is this huge cloud that is always above me of certain people believing that about me, and somehow it does interfere with the independence, even if one has given it up. It really is crazy, Doug, but it does affect the psyche of somebody that an institution that had such power over you for a long time insists that that is still the way it is on paper. To have it on paper and not be able to get rid of that drives people to just to do whatever they can to get rid of it.
Mm. Let's take a phone call. 801-585-WEST is the number to join us. And David has been waiting in Mill Creek. David, welcome.
Good morning.
Good morning.
I just wanted to first preface saying, you know, I understand and can be compassionate with people having fear about doctrine that they don't understand. But I'm somewhat uncompassionate about people that don't take the time to learn the doctrine. the doctrine that's being presented on sealing is at best a light sketch, and at worst a total misdirection for why we have sealing. It's not to imprison women or men, for that matter, in
but a she's not saying that, David.
For the life to come.
She's not saying that. She's not saying that. She's acknowledging that sealing is an eternal ordinance to bind families together. But what she's saying
is, we're acknowledging that families are the issue, not the individual.
Well, she agrees. Carolyn Pearson, I'll let you speak for yourself, but she doesn't disagree with that, David. She doesn't disagree with that.
The principle then that's operating is agency. You have the agency not to be involved in this life and the life to come.
But why don't you get to her point? Her point is that there are circumstances that are really complicated that sound chaotic. If you're take, for example, David, and go with me on this. There's a woman who marries a widower. His wife died of cancer. And he was sealed to her in the temple. And this woman then gets married to this man and is sealed to him in the temple. What happens in the afterlife to that woman? Is she supposed to live in that polygamous relationship? Or how does it work?
All three parties have agency. Whether they choose to do that is an individual action. Just because you have somebody who is sealed to somebody doesn't even mean those two people will be together in the eternity. We all know anyone who has lived and learned the doctrine of the LDS faith that it is participle on obedience and then agency.
Carolyn Pearson, respond to David, if you would.
The easy out, David, for all of this is to say God wants us to be happy. So let's just forget about any of the difficulties that we seem to perceive right now, because it'll all work out in the end, and we will all have agency. But at the same time, at the very same time, we are saying what is bound here by priesthood authority will be bound forever. And if you could read some of the confusion and the pain expressed by the people who have written into me, you would know that it's much, much more difficult than simply to say, well, you're going to have your agency one way or another, so why even sweat about it? We are told certain things right here and now. I'm going to quick just turn to the page where I tell about my great-grandfather and great-grandmother. She left him the day after he brought home a second wife. And I was puzzled forever about why he suddenly did that after a couple of decades of being there. And then here's what I finally learned. I will make this very short. And I'm going to just quote from a lecture, a sermon that President Brigham Young gave in Paris, Idaho, in the year 1873. And I'm sure that my great-grandparents were present for this. He's telling that that Joseph received a revelation on celestial marriage. Now, where a man in this church says, I don't want but one wife, I will live my religion with one, he will perhaps be saved in the celestial kingdom. But when he gets there, he will not find himself in possession of any wife at all. He's had a talent he has hid up. He'll come forward and say, here's that which you gave me. I've not wasted it. Here's one talent. And he will not enjoy it. But it will be taken and given to those who have improved the talents they received. And he will find himself without any wife. And he will remain single forever. And if the woman is determined not to enter into plural marriage, that woman, when she comes forth, will have the privilege of living in single blessedness throughout all eternity. And I think this is the reason that my great-grandfather was so terrified of losing his one wife, because Brigham Young had just told him that's what would happen.
But you hear the argument.
That he determined.
But you hear the argument, Carolyn, that was – all right, that was in the days of Brigham Young and, you know, the church has sort of foregone all of that. And that was a – and that's a dated – concern, because you don't believe it is a dated concern. I mean, some of the for example, you talked with your cousin, and this was one of the things that I think prompted you to go public about all of this.
This is the cousin that shares this great grandfather and great grandmother with me.
Yeah, tell that story. This is 96-year-old, or at least she was at the time, 96-year-old Charlotte.
Yes, and this was just 3 or 4 years ago, and I use that name because I didn't feel I
got it.
I could ask her if I could use her name. We were together, and I was, as always, we were reminiscing about a lot of things. And I said, boy, Charlotte, you and I are getting older, and one of these days we're going to – I must insert her that her dear husband, who loved her more than I have ever seen or heard a man express love for his wife, he had passed away about 10 years prior. And I said, dear, you and I are going to be crossing over to the next life pretty soon. And how do you feel about making that transition? And she said, oh, I feel fine about that. But I wonder if my husband has taken a second wife already. And I was just stunned. And I said, oh, surely not. And she said, well, that's what we're taught. And I remember being filled with outrage that my cousin had to spend the last days of her life, instead of looking forward to this beautiful reunion with a man who I had seen so often weep as he told me how lucky he was to have her. Rather than that, she was forced, because of something her church had taught her, to worry, what if he's taken a second wife already? And that fueled me. And that made me so angry, because that is really spiritual violence. And so I determined that I would do what little bit I could to give comfort to these women and to insist that these hard questions be put out on the table. Is this what we want as an LDS community who is composed of about the best people I can imagine? I love the Mormon community. Is this the best that we have to offer, to allow our widows to have that kind of distress, to have our widows be put in the position that they are, to have our young girls growing up reading section 132 to remind them that, like Emma, they really had better be careful about being obedient, or they too would be destroyed. That's what many women wrote into me in the survey. And I say, shame on us, because we are better than that.
Carolyn Pearson is with us. When we come back from a break, Carolyn, I want to talk about how you fix it. You mentioned 132 for the uninitiated. This is a reference to a Mormon scripture in the Doctrine and Covenants, and we'll get to that when we get back from a break. You can join us. David, thank you very much, by the way. 801-585-WEST is the number, our email address, radiowest@kuer.org. The book is The Ghost of Eternal Polygamy, Haunting the Hearts and Heaven of Mormon Women and Men. Back in a moment. You're listening to Radio West on KUER. This is Radio West. I'm Doug Fabrizio. Back now with Carolyn Pearson. We're talking about her new book, The Ghost of Eternal Polygamy, Haunting the Hearts and Heaven of Mormon Women and Men. I want to ask you, we don't have a lot of time to go through the sort of justification for polygamy. You go through this and you sort of break it down and you debate all of the points. Some of them, you know, the reason there was polygamy, or Joseph Smith started polygamy, was to multiply and replenish the earth. It was to provide husbands for these surplus female members. It was to produce faithful members. It was to try or test people. God is putting polygamy here to test people. You've sort of broken all of these down, and you don't really find any merit in any of these. In fact, you say that in the book that you've become personally persuaded that polygamy exists today mostly from error. So how do you explain it? What do you mean by error? Because for a lot of people, to be quite honest, is the simplest explanation is for Joseph Smith creating plural marriage was to sort of satisfy his libido or his ego, that this was about sex or power.
Well, I do understand that. And I don't personally find that really simplistic answer to cover the whole territory. I'm certain that there was personal desire involved here. But Joseph was caught in his beautiful vision of uniting God's family forever, uniting them to him, uniting to him all of the friends that he so dearly loved. My dear friend Leonard Arrington, then church historian, has told me in several interviews that I had with him some time ago that he felt that Joseph's polygamy came as an unintended consequence from his great determination to unite people to him personally in his eternal kingdom. And I found that I agreed with a couple of statements made by Richard Bushman in his important book subtitled Rough Stone Rolling, that Joseph was not so much lusting after women as he was lusting after kin. And Leonard Arrington emphasized to me the fact that the law of adoption was also becoming in force about this time. And it went on, and it was only in a matter of years that later on, within several years, polygamy was officially abandoned and the law of adoption was officially abandoned.
But Carolyn, you know the response to that. I mean, according to many stories, Joseph Smith lied about it. He invoked the wrath of God for those who didn't go along with his marriage schemes, including, as you know, the parents of a 14-year-old girl. I mean, how can you really justify that or really excuse that? I mean, if those stories are to be believed, this was a very disturbing way of behaving.
I find it a very disturbing way of behaving as well. And see, because I'm a Libra, I can say on the one hand there's this, on the other hand there's that. and I acknowledge that Joseph's behavior was very, very disturbing.
But then you say in your book that you love him with a heart that he broke a long time ago. And you'll forgive
indeed.
Me if I suggest that might sound to some like an abused spouse who just chooses to look the other way on unacceptable behavior. I mean, how do you respond to that? Because clearly you're hearing that.
I understand. Well, I do say that I came to love Joseph Smith dearly, and I believe he brought some really excellent things into this world. But the fact that I am saying I believe that what he did in error, should make it very clear that I am not upholding what he did.
Yeah.
I think it was despicable that he lied to his wife, Emma, that he had married the two women that he had, and then months later married them again in front of Emma to make it look like that was the first time. I think there were many things that he did that were so out of line, it leaves us reeling. And consequently, this whole thing is not easy. To just condemn Joseph Smith and say he was nothing but an egomaniac and a sex fiend. Hmm. It's much, much more complex than that. I believe that he felt somehow that he was doing what he had been commanded to do. And I believe that in some way he was mistaken.
Yeah.
So that's why at the end I'm saying I have a belief that Joseph, who was pleased to see the ending of the ban on black men for the priesthood, will also be pleased in his eternal sphere to see the final ending of polygamy, which has done no good and done only destruction to our church and to the people involved. I believe that Brother Joseph's spirit will rejoice to see that.
So how do you fix this, Carolyn, at this point? I mean, if it's there was a reference to and this comes from someone who is writing anonymously. They say the elephant in the room is Section 132. It's no wonder that women are afraid. And this is a reference to Emma Smith. And again, bringing down sort of the destruction of the Lord, if you don't go along with this. So how do you fix what is a doctrine in the church? What do you change
that? Keep in mind that theoretically, this church has a very basic tenet of eternal progression and of ongoing revelation. And for someone who is really interested, I ask that they read this book so that they can better understand this final question that you have put to me of what I'm suggesting.
Yeah.
Because as a friend of mine who is an attorney wrote to me, he said, you have built your case so tightly, brick by brick, that by the time you come to the end of it, we have nothing to do but as quickly as we can to put in place what you suggest. Now, I'm going to go through those suggestions, but I know that there will be people who will find this pretty radical. And indeed, it is radical. Radical means going back to the root of something. Hmm. Okay, here's my belief of what must and will happen for us to bring a Mormon future that is truly post-polygamy. Belief one, a couple who chooses to marry in the temple can go into that holy place and stand on equal ground, regardless of whoever has had a sealing to somebody else, and then leave that part of it up to God. Now, this is not without precedent. President David O. McKay gave Hubie Brown approval to do that many times, saying, let's let the Lord straighten it out when they get to the other side. I think that should be pulled in as the go-to result or reason why we allow an equality of sealing in the temple.
This was, by the way, this was a story that was invoked by one of our listeners, Sean. Said, my grandmother's first husband died in World War II. She actually married my grandfather in the temple as well. The direction she received in a letter from the First Presidency was that it would be worked out in the afterlife. So it sounds like he may have fit in, this story may fit into that story as well.
Yes. Well, there have been precedents that show that this has already happened. And I'm suggesting that it would be a wonderful thing if that precedent were extended to everyone to take away that worry and just say, something like this union is blessed to be an eternal one, depending only on your love for one another and the will of the Lord. And let them live that way, just loving one another and not worrying about what's going to be happening in the next life. My second belief is that Section 132 of the Doctrine and Covenants will receive an inspired revision with plural marriage removed from the canon so that women and girls will be spared the wounding to our femaleness that we receive today. There are precedents in which a lot of things have been taken out to avoid this kind of pain. You know, we used to sing in a hymn, long shall his blood, which was shed by assassins, stain Illinois while the earth lauds his fame. That's changed now. We didn't want to offend the good people of Illinois. Sometimes we forget about the feelings of women. We changed a line in a hymn. We didn't want to offend Indians. We don't usually think about not offending women. We've changed things like the Adam God theory that were very, very pronounced a long time ago. We've done a lot of changing. And the Doctrine and Covenants has been changed in a number of ways. I'm suggesting that it be looked at again with women in the spotlight to say, let us finally take a real look at what we're saying to and about women.
So you say that this was early on in the acknowledgement section where you mentioned several church leaders whose confidence in the importance of this book has meant the world to you. I'm guessing you can't say too much about that, but obviously
you
don't want to betray too many confidences. But can you say there are leaders in Mormonism and maybe even leaders in high places who are uncomfortable with this issue and might relate to some of the changes you're trying to make?
I'm certain that there are leaders on every level who are and have been uncomfortable about the ongoing ghost of polygamy in our homes, in our marriages, in our self-images for women for a very, very long time. And one of the people of whom I spoke said, you know, your book is about more than polygamy. This could actually be a way out on a number of ways, in a number of things that our church needs to look at.
You say you're shamelessly optimistic.
I am.
Yeah.
I believe that the goodness of the Mormon people, membership and leadership, is such that we will not forever allow this canker to remain on our church. Polygamy has been nothing but trouble and pain, especially for women, from the beginning.
It's Carolyn Pearson. Her new book is The Ghost of Eternal Polygamy, Haunting the Hearts and Heaven of Mormon Women and Men. She joined us today from a studio in Oakland, California. Carolyn, thank you very much for taking the time.
Oh, and thanks to you, Doug.
Radio West is a production of KUER News. Our thanks to Tony Liu. We have technical direction from Tim Slover. The program produced by Benjamin Bombard and Elaine Clark. I'm Doug Fabrizio.